welcome to the Wine Vault. On tonight's episode, Rob and Scott go back to France to review the Clos de Monet Côte du Rhône. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's Wine Vault. Welcome to the Wine Vault. It is I, Rob the Wine Guy, and tonight, I am joined by Scott the Unlicensed Taxi Driver.
It is so good to be here tonight.
You know, it is, and I'll tell you why. It has been weeks since we've been able to record the show. You have been listening to older episodes that we just never utilized. Bar Dog is not that old, but
no.
Pride was old, a couple. We almost had, I almost did Novenophobia, and it was such a bad episode. Do you know why? You can't chew. We were eating crackers during it, and you can't...
Is that when I brought those keto crackers?
Yes, yeah. And no, it was the almond crackers.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah, it was not professional. The other one, I don't remember what it was, but let's just say Wilford was in most of the episode.
Yes, that's right, I was. And for some reason, Rob the Wine Guy felt that the rating on that one would be beyond explicit, if there is such a thing. Hard R. I always got that confused with hard on. I don't know why.
Well,
because it always got me excited.
Well, because you always wanted to be able to get one, just like you wanted to get hard R.
Oh, trust me.
Can't.
Give me 37 seconds and, you know, some time alone. You'll see what I can do.
Anyway.
Oh, Lord.
On tonight's episode, the Triple B is not on. She is still having the side effects of buying, having a new fancy TV that I just installed for her because she wants to. No, she claims that A, she still can't taste right. Some would argue that she never could. B, she got a new TV. So there's that. She might pop in out of guilt. We'll see.
Well,
she'll be in on, I'm sure she'll be back on the next episode that you hear, unless it's something else. You know, I don't know.
It's something else. She'll be back and you'll hear her next episode, or you won't.
Well, I didn't say why we haven't recorded in several weeks. It's because I got fucking COVID, and so did the Triple B, and so did three of my children. Fucking. By the way, folks, it's not a cold, and it's not the flu. It's quite awful. It sucks. It really does. So, thank you, by the way. You know what I did not need? I did not need to hear that the drug, whatever it is, approved the booster for my age. While I had COVID.
Yeah,
that's bad timing. I talked to my uncle and he goes, oh yeah, you know, you can get the booster. I was like, I fucking a lot of good that does me right fucking now.
Yeah, I got the booster.
Now
I got it naturally. Au natural.
Yeah. The boys, they've been boosted recently. No symptoms whatsoever.
There you go.
None.
See?
So that does work. Mm-hmm. You just have to let people take it, fuckers. Anyway. Never forgetting all that. I never lost my sense of smell or taste. And I don't need to watch the TV tonight. So I'm on the show. And anyway, I'm also the host.
Never had any sense to lose.
That's true. On tonight's show, we are having something that we're kind of excited about. It should be an interesting one. Back to Grenache, because that's all we drink. You know, right? We have 85,000 Grenaches. And this is yet another Grenache-centric wine. But it's from Côte du Rhône in France, so Southern Rhone, but it's from an esteemed producer, really a Chateauneuf producer that does Côte du Rhône, and more towards the Chateauneuf realm. You'll see some wineries that are Rhone specific, like a Jigal or a Louis Bernard. They are more driven towards the lower end stuff, even though they do a Chateauneuf, they do Gigonnas, they do all those things. Their focus, their moneymaker, is the Côte du Rhône. This is not the case with this winery. This is Clos de Monivet, or Clos de Monivet.
It's spelled M-O-N-T dash O-L-I-V-E-T.
Yeah, Ivier, basically. Mon-Ivier. And this is their Côte du Rhône. Now, as opposed to $13, $15, $16, it doesn't cost that. It costs $22, so it's a little bit more. And it's also Ve viñas, you'll see that on the label, and that means old vine. So these are older grapes. 15% alcohol, I do believe, if you look at that.
15.5, which is a big number for a French
very old grapes.
Produced wine.
Well, they wanted to make sure there was plenty of alcohol for our first episode back. It is. I don't have the 19 on the website. They haven't updated that, but they do have the 18 blend. So think of it in a similar gauge to this. 68% Grenache, 12% Syrah, 10% Cinsault, 5% Mourvèdre, and 5% Carignan, which is more of a Chateauneuf type blend. You're going to have multiple things, and you bring down the percentages a little bit more. Often with Côte d'Or, you're going to see a blend like that, but you might see only, you might see a little bit fewer things, fewer varietals. Now, Chateauneuf is going to have even more beyond 5. It might have 7, it might have 9. It's going to be bigger. But this is also all stainless steel and or concrete. So there's no oak. This isn't on oak. So hopefully we're going to have a fresh wine that shows a lot of the varietal characters of those varietals, and it'll be nice and fresh and lush for us. You found what?
A version of the 19 on Extra Wine, Enotica, online.
Oh, that sounds great.
And it says 80% Grenache, 10% Carignan, 10% Syrah.
That's a pretty big departure from, because, you know, I don't know about that.
Let's see what Wine Searcher says. Wine Searcher doesn't have any information.
Now, as he looks,
this is a Skernik.
This will also, I think some of you might be, that are familiar with rum, and Côte d'Or specifically, you say, well, isn't this a village? It's not. But isn't this one of the single, you know, commune things? It's not. It actually pulls from multiple different places. So, St. Laurent, St. Cardel, Gisac, Le Clau. So it's a blend of a lot of those different communes. But
We've had this before. Inconsistent information. This is Skernik.
Skernik.
Who's the importer.
That helps.
It's Famille Sabon is the proprietor of this vineyard. 65% Grenache, 15% Syrah,
all right.
10% Mourvèdre, 5% Cinsault, 5% Carignan.
That's possible. That makes more sense. I mean, you're going to have that kind of spread, but I would think they're going to stick with those varietals in some sort of different.
Right?
Yeah. And it's exciting to hear the more Mourvèdre, so it might be maybe a little bit bigger.
Yeah. 30% whole cluster, which, you know, is old school. Now, it says it's fermented all in concrete, but it says it's aged in 75% cement. 15% foudre, F-O-U-D-R-E, which are
big wooden barrels.
Yes.
All right, so that was different than this. Okay.
5% stainless and 5% older barrique.
Oh, so it's old. Okay, so they did put that year on oak, 18. It doesn't appear that they did. So 19.
But that's really not much on oak.
No, in the like, foudre, a foudre, you're going to have this big, think of a massive, massive oak barrel. And wine, oak is imported into wine different ways. One, it could be a new French or new oak. Okay, so there's a lot more there. Also, surface contact. All right, so more of the wine is not touching the oak in a big.
The smaller the size barrel,
the more intensity,
the more contact with the juice.
Yeah, so the more intensity, you're going to get smaller barrels and newer barrels. Here, old barrels and or big barrels. So subtlety, that's what they're going for.
It's interesting. So it's just it's Southern Rhone. So it's, you know, a little more towards Marseille. You know, I'm one. We love Grenache based stuff, whether it's French or not French. But this is interesting. I'm trying to remember one we've done that's been 15.5 alcohol content.
I don't recall one
jumps out.
Not
at me.
Not that's from Côte d'Or. But this is a big dog. This is a big dog. Some Chateauneufs can get up in there.
I was going to say, I think that's the only one I remember.
Yeah.
But even, like, even most Chateauneufs, they're not all going to be 15.5.
Well, the winemaker's notes say hints of Chateauneuf pervade each sip from this chiseled beauty. Expansive aromas of fresh boysenberry, black raspberry, and spice cake. Seamless and concentrated on the palate, one of the most complex Côte d'Aronne's wines made. Now, that's the winemaker said that. He's not going to say it tastes like Kool-Aid and, you know, and Vaseline. He probably won't say that.
I know something that tastes like Kool-Aid and Vaseline, but let's not talk about that. No, I don't want to talk about it, Scott.
Yeah.
No.
You know, even Joe Wagner is not going to say it tastes like Kool-Aid and Vaseline.
He should, because that's what Miami tastes like. So, folks, yeah, we're going to take a break. Have you ever had their sparkling wine? Kool-Aid and Vaseline is what that shit smells.
Did you have some?
No, but
I mean, what were you celebrating?
Celebrating.
Yeah, that you
COVID. Had. Let's cheer. Let's have a toast to COVID. Oh, Miami.
Miami sparkler. Yeah.
Give me some more COVID. So, folks, we're going to take a break. But we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault.
Hey, everybody. It's Rob the Wine Guy. Do you need more Wine Vault in your life? Well, if you do, check out our website, thewinevault.org. On there, we have our full catalog of episodes. We also have B-sides, some outtakes. Hell, we even write articles from time to time. So if you need that extra fix to tide you over until the next Sunday, check out thewinevault.org, and we'll be right back.
And we're back, folks. I just looked at the Chateauneuf from Mondivet, and it is 15.5% alcohol. Interesting. It's the 19. But this wine does have some review. Well, no, it has one review.
Thank you very much. This is James Suckley, and I'm happy to be on the show tonight, partly because the Triple B is not on. I understand that she's going to be watching her television. Hopefully, it freezes on a picture of me, if it's possible. She probably wants to watch my masterclass, and you can YouTube that for free. I did have it so you could pay for it, but I'm sure she wants to go in there and learn more about her palate and expand it by listening to James Suckling. JamesSuckling.com, folks.
I'm Check sure she out. Lives for that.
Yes, my OnlyFans page, too. Yes. Anyway, I provided this wine 92 of my points, and I wrote a rich and generous Côte d'Aronne with tons of damson plums and ripe blackberries, but also notes of hot, dry earth and spice. Lovely, rich, and creamy mid-palate with tons of soft tannin. Then a long, silky finish. A touch of overripe plum comes through at the end, but the wine remains balanced and subtle. Drink now. Scott. Drink it all.
Drink it up!
So there you go.
It's like a James Brown review at the end. Drink it up! Drink it up now!
Book Boa. So,
Teddy Pendergrass in the house. Turn him off.
In the glass, you have a dark, plumish colored wine, really. Good clarity. Slightly translucent.
It's not the darkest red wine we've ever had.
Well, it's not extracted particularly, but it's more of a plummy color. Red plum, not like, you know what I mean?
Plum towards a cranberry, actually, having a light reflects off it a little. But beautiful legs.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little, like, when it catches the light just right, there's a little, like, oiliness about the texture. It's pretty.
Mm-hmm. It is a pretty wine.
On the nose.
On the nose. Very subtle. Very subtle.
That floral is the first thing that jumps out at me.
Rose petals?
Yeah, rose petals. It's,
maybe a little violet. Not quite sweet enough to be a honeysuckle or something like that.
No.
Maybe a little red raspberry. And a little menthol and mint.
Red raspberry, maybe like a ripe strawberry with that raspberry.
A very ripe strawberry, possibly, yeah.
Overall, all in all, as you said, it's a subtle, really subdued, subtle nose, but it's a nice nose.
Nice nose, yeah.
A What I don't get that I might expect is some kind of earthy component, some kind of herbal component.
True. You think.
Just not there.
It's a pretty nose, a light, a very subtle but light, pretty nose. And this is the first drink I have had since almost 10 days. So this ought to be fun.
This
yeah,
is?
I haven't drank since, you know, then. Strange. Oh, man. I get what James is saying on the finish, the overripe plum, but I really like that. This wine, oh, is a really a strong powerhouse wine. Very lush. It doesn't taste like it looks. Big red fruits, not rhubarb. What is that?
It's so for me, the texture is really interesting on this.
Mm-hmm.
It starts off almost lighter,
mm-hmm.
goes slow, and then all of a sudden that luscious, almost like creamy texture comes through, but it doesn't hit your palate that way. It develops as you get that more towards the finish, more towards the tannin. By the time you get through this, you're covered in creamy, silky goodness, man.
There's a fragrant chocolate mid palate. It just waves almost like a bitter milk almost like a bitter milk chocolate creaminess that has pops and radiating all sorts of different herbal and light fruit pops that just go through there. Just a silky, just sexy drink. And it's spicy a little bit on the finish, and the oak is prominent too. Yep. You know that the oak is there.
It comes across astringent on the finish.
Mm-hmm.
What's not to like about this?
Mm.
Now, it's not starkly Grenache. What it doesn't have is that beastie side of Grenache, which you wouldn't necessarily expect in a French.
You taste the Grenache, though.
I'm not saying you don't taste it, but it's not as beastly. It's not as burly as some Grenaches. What I would with this, you know, there's a couple things you pick them out of there, and you're almost like, it's got some Napa characteristics. That plum.
It's very uptown. It doesn't have a rusticness to it.
No.
It tastes not stylized, but first of all, it tastes exponentially more expensive than what it costs. If you drank this, you would mistake it. I would mistake it for kind of like a more of a Syrah dominated. Could be because I had COVID, but Syrah dominated.
No.
Yeah.
No, I get it. It's and I think that's, you know, it's 65% Grenache.
$50 bottle of wine.
Yes, but it's 65% Grenache,
mm-hmm.
with all those other components.
Yeah.
And that lends you to believe that it's something that it's not.
Now, you're not going to mistake it for Chateauneuf, because Chateauneuf tends to be, well, it tends to be, young Chateauneuf. Nobody drinks young Chateauneuf, so maybe that, I've never drank young Chateauneuf, quite frankly. Well, I've never drank really young Chateauneuf, like that 19. I'm never touching that. Any Chateauneuf I've ever touched at least had 5 to 7 years of bottle age.
Yeah.
From anywhere. But
I think you could easily convince somebody that this isn't French. The way the fruit is.
Yeah.
The texture.
You could tell somebody that, no, this is a really nice, nice
California blend.
Or Washington Syrah type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, something from K Vintners or one of those.
This is really interesting. The blend is phenomenal. I love how they've treated this. It is interesting that it's really, you know, what the combination of the two is like 20% on oak, and that oak is so it's not prominent. I wouldn't say it's prominent on the finish, but it you can pick it out. It's there.
You can.
It doesn't dominate the wine.
Well, it's where though it's supposed to be at the end, and it doesn't sour.
Yeah,
it's nice oak. You know, shit. Go ahead. I'll think about it.
I really can't wait to take my next sip of this. This is fantastic. You know, I'm a sucker for. In the past, I've talked about wines that kind of shift gears. The mouthfeel on this starts light and then it builds. And by the time that oak kicks in, you've got this luscious, creamy. It's almost got like a dairy texture. It doesn't have those flavors, but it's just
the mint palate. Yeah,
it's like the density of the wine is expanding as it comes across your palate.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, it reminds me, and I had said some Washington Syrahs, but like Scott said, it doesn't taste overtly French, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. It doesn't taste like Cote de Rhone. I would never pull out Cote de Rhone because I would say, you know, Cote de Rhone normally tastes like XYZ. This is R. This is so much beyond what Cote de Rhone is, but it's from a premium producer doing it. I've had like Beaucastel. I've had their Cote de Rhone. You know, I've had some different higher end stuff, and there are those out there. You'll find it. Chateau La Nerth? You can buy their Cote de Rhone right now. About the same price in the 20s. Some good value can be had. Some really great wines can be had from some of those Chateauneuf-dominated producers. Because the Cote de Rhone, it's not necessarily for a moneymaker. They're just crafting a really top wine, but they have to price it cheaper than the Chateauneuf. So, you know what? Guess what? You benefit. You just do.
Yeah.
People that love Syrahs, drink this. People that love Grenache, drink this. Maybe not Spanish. You're never going to mistake this for a Spanish Grenache.
It's not as burly. However, I think you're going to enjoy it.
Oh, you're going to enjoy it. If you like expensive, good wine, you're going to enjoy this.
What would you pair this with?
Me. No, what would I pair?
Me and Wolford in a shower curtain. See, I called you about that, and I left you a message, but it involved a circus midget and a donkey and a shower curtain. Let's not talk about that. But
folks, later tonight, we're going to have an intervention because Rob the Wine Guy has been leaving me voice texts.
Have I?
As Wilford Wrong.
Wilford just had a lot to tell you. He missed
you. There was a lot to say, apparently.
Well, I mean, you know. What was the thing about... Oh, Wilford was concerned. He was complaining about song lyrics. And he was listening to Dude Looks Like a Lady, right? Yeah. So.
Funny choice.
Because he felt that Aerosmith stole that song from his life.
Well...
It's true.
You know...
I don't remember what the guy's name was, but, you know. He said that the guy wasn't very ladylike, meaning then he had to tell you what that meant. So
he did tell me what that meant.
What did it mean, Scott?
It was not something I'm willing to repeat.
I don't know. It's just, you know, Scott just needs these things to be spoon-fed to him.
No, I'm thankful for messages from my friend Wilford Wrong.
Yeah, that's right.
You admitted that I'm your friend, huh?
It makes me chuckle, but it also makes me very, very concerned.
You're hard up for companionship.
For somebody's well-being.
And that works for me.
So, what would I pair this with? That's a complicated thing because, you know, maybe a beef bourguignon. A roast of some sort with an earthy something. It has to be earthy and herbal to a certain extent. And it should be beef based, but not steak.
Stroganoff.
I don't know. I don't love stroganoff. Try something else.
I do. I
Becky does.
But it's, you know, it's got to be hearty, and I want to have a huge stock, maybe even veal stock when I'm going to make.
I've had that dish. You know, I remember. From the refectory, I had braised beef shoulder.
Okay.
Something like that worked well. Was it braised or? Yeah. And then I think you could do certain cuts of meat as a steak, but you'd have to,
you'd be saucing it in a way. You know, maybe like a black peppercorn steak, you know, with a nice, you know, sauce like that. But filet would be okay. Filet would work. Filet would be nice. I one time had, it was in Myrtle. I don't remember what the restaurant was, but it was filet. And they did this cracked black peppercorn sauce.
Okay.
And it was gorgeous. You could taste every peppercorn. And the wine, what the hell do we drink? B.R. Cone or something like that. I don't know what it was. But the wine hydrated the peppercorns. And you just got this, whenever the wine would hit the peppercorn, it would just burst and just really, really just light up. And this wine would be nice with filet. That's what I would do it with. Yeah. And I would do that. I mean, this wine at $20, this is a special occasion wine. You know? This is a wine that you'd pull out when you have that. I mean, for my birthday, this would be a wonderful thing to drink.
I tell you what else, this would be really good with a perfect pairing for Frank's charcuterie.
Well, sure.
And a pasta.
Charcuterie, sure.
With his homemade marinated veg, the nice charcuterie head, and he is the best buffalo mozzarella.
Mm-hmm. That's great. You could do I'm going to stick with full, you know, not a fatty cut of meat. Right. That's the thing. You don't want it to be fatty. But yeah, I think filet, it would knock it out of the park. Not with blue cheese, not with anything too strong.
No.
That's the thing. This should be the strongest funky thing. It's not overly funky, but this should be the strongest thing of the bunch. You don't want anything to overpower it. Filet itself can be mild, and then you would be very, very modest in your preparation. But a peppercorn sauce, I think that would go well with this. A little spice is not a bad thing. But blue cheese, béarnaise, or something like that is too much.
Old school dish. I'm not saying from this restaurant, but this dish with maybe a little better quality beef product. But you remember York Steakhouse and their beef tips with sautéed mushrooms and onions?
Well, I don't know. I don't remember York Steakhouse, but I know the dish that you're talking about. Yeah, that would work.
Never went to York Steakhouse. I'm dead and taking.
I'm not
a
trashy fuck.
Oh,
I went to Ponderosa.
Yeah.
To eat but shit.
You're not a trashy fuck.
Yeah, eat shit.
It's because
that was like 1984. Remember when you were 70? You were still finding York Steakhouses and going. Well,
there was still a York Steakhouse on the West Side. I'm sure just recently.
I'm sure you went there.
Well, I did not go.
There. Oh yeah, you got a T-bone for $6.
It used to be in Eastland Mall.
Oh, I'm sure it was. Oh yeah. It would be fun to go to a place like that that was clean, that you know was clean, that passed its inspection, just to see how bad it is.
Well,
or you could just go to Outback and have the same lousy experience, just pay four times as much.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's this Facebook videos. I don't know what the guys are. I don't want to be a problem, but they're like they compare like Outback versus Texas Roadhouse, and they do that on the show. So they have a steak from one, a steak from the other. The problem with it is, they went to the restaurant, bought the steak there, and then brought it to do their little Facebook thing. And it looks like it sat there for 10 years. And they're saying, oh, that's not a very good cut of meat. No, it's not, asshole, because it's been 3 hours since you went and picked it up at the fucking restaurant.
And no, by the way, it's Texas Roadhouse.
Yeah, but it's like, even then, it's got to be fucking hot. You can't have cold steak. And then, you know, oh boy. They even did microwavable dinners. Hungry Man and shit like that.
Well,
I don't know.
What are they drinking with it?
Not water.
What would you pair with a Hungry Man Salisbury steak?
First of all, I like Salisbury steak a lot.
That's disgusting.
Not from them. I mean, a proper made Salisbury
steak.
There's
no such thing.
Well, you know, a chop steak. Ooh.
Now, chop steak's different.
Hyde Park's chop steak with this. Oh, Hyde Park restaurant chain in Ohio. And they have a early evening menu, and they do a chop steak. It's like a 12-ounce, and then they have sautéed mushrooms and this sauce over top whipped potatoes. It will make you change your religion. And it's a two-course for $20. And the first course is their lobster bisque. I mean, it's just like Oh, no. So Henry and I went there before a crew game, and Henry had a wedge salad in this, like, candied raisins and all sorts of great, I mean, the regular stuff. And he had shrimp mac and cheese. Of course, though, we had to have beef carpaccio. We have to do that.
Well, you don't have to, but...
Oh, stop it. What are you, a communist?
Could have beef tartare. No,
I'm not going to do that. They don't have beef tartare.
Well, you could have beef tartare.
You know, I like beef tartare, but I prefer beef carpaccio. Probably because beef tartare reminds me of dog food. There's that.
Unless it's got a quail egg over it and it's prepared table side.
That's really ritzy dog food. Well, but it's still good. I still eat it. I'm not a big tuna tartare guy. Nothing wrong with it.
It's fine.
It's just not beef. I had beef carpaccio in Longrano, Spain, at a restaurant called Sin Gluten.
Oof.
And we did, I would call them small plates, but they were full portions. We did that, something I don't remember. They did a mushroom risotto. It was like Rob's food porn.
Yeah. Is there a favorite side? If you could have a side as a main, as mushroom risotto for you?
No.
Oh. Probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Our spot down in Florida, Charlie's, mm-hmm. does spectacular, both tartare
mm-hmm.
and carpaccio. Just freaking phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
With the proper sides, with the scallions, with capers, with they do like a garlic onion paste thing that they're just little side accompaniments to the tartare.
Accoutrement.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Mm. You know what else is beautiful?
This wine.
Clermont Auvergne. Ooh la la.
You know what's...
That's really good.
Beautiful, I'm really thankful for.
You don't have to say me. It's okay. But I know it's me.
Turley's Fall Release.
Oh, that is a nice release. You know. We spent more than we normally do. I'm sure you went crazy, but...
I spent what I spend.
$3,000?
No, my cuz. Hey, cuz. Cuz is out there. Mm-hmm. It's his first allotment.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good one.
He just applied and got his allotment. It was... His allotment was weird. It was really small.
Well, he's a new time. Yeah.
But it was...
I got a Monte Rosso. I did the Brooklyn. I did a bunch of... I did an Uber Ruth. And...
White coat.
Two white coats. And four old vines. Yeah. I did nine bottles. Is that nine? Do the math.
It's...
Yeah, we did White Coat this year because White Coat is it's $35 a bottle, and it's an emulation of a white Chateauneuf, and it's a very good emulation of a white Chateauneuf. It's one of the better emulations.
Spectacularly good.
It really is.
We had it last year for Thanksgiving at my cousin's house, and they loved it.
It's a wine that's good enough for, I mean, it's a wine that doesn't make you wish you were drinking red, and that's always a wonderful thing for white. So
it's fantastic. It really is. It's my favorite white wine.
Yeah.
By far. I mean, it's not even close. I like other white wines. We love Turley's Sauvignon Blanc, and it's fantastic. But White Coat, oh my Lord.
Yeah. Well, folks, we're going to take a break. But we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault.
Hey everybody, it's Rob the Wine Guy. Do you love the Wine Vault? Do you want the world to know about the Wine Vault? Well, do you know the best way to do that? By giving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Whether that be on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn or Spreaker or Podbean or some other app I've never heard of but probably gave your phone a virus when you downloaded it. So take that time. Give us that review. Give us your thoughts and feedback. That way, everyone will know to listen to, enjoy, and join us on the Wine Vault. And we'll be right back.
And we're back, folks. So, on tonight's Potpourri, Scott, I'm going to ask you a question.
A question?
A question. What is your least favorite red varietal?
Hmm.
I don't think we've ever asked that question before. If we did, it never made it to air anyway, so what's the difference? The least favorite? What almost do you hate? In its normal sense, not like, you know, Rosé of Merlot or some shit like that. No, no.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
I can't say I have one that I hate the most.
You just really don't like.
But...
And in general, not like I don't like Tempranillos from California made by, you know, the arsonist. We know you don't like those, but generalization, that's what people love. What don't you care for? And I can't say Shiraz. And neither can you.
Because you've been buying Syrah lately, so.
Well, I like Syrah. Just not from Aussie. Although
Syrah,
I did buy one.
Shiraz, it's the same thing.
No, it's not. It's the Aussie in it. Although I did buy an Aussie Shiraz. No, I think about
yes,
it.
You like Aussie Shiraz.
No, I like good like Aussie to make Shiraz. Fun of those. You know. I just don't like bad Aussie Shiraz.
I remember that was like your shtick. You'd say Shiraz, Syrah.
Shiraz.
Shiraz.
Yeah, I know. No, no, no. I listened to the Yolumbo Y series Shiraz episode. And that's the one where Wilford was on there quite a bit. Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Well, what else are you going to do? You can't listen. You can't drink that fucking wine. It tastes like shit.
What red varietal do I hate?
What do you hate?
I don't hate any of them.
Well, if you were going to pick one.
But probably my least favorite. Just in general.
Yeah, that was the question, yeah.
Would probably be Pinot Noir, and it's
not that
I hate it.
Spoo.
It's just I don't think it's done very well.
By
in
who?
In general,
most
that's
people.
Just my.
You just
take.
Drink the ones that are done well.
So I mean, I'm sure there's these obscure. I mean, I could say like.
You probably can't.
Burgundy, you know, the Burgundy
wine. But Burgundy's obscure, yeah, you're right.
Burgundy, you know, it's like...
Hardy Burgundy?
Hardy Burgundy.
That's not Pinot Noir, probably. I'm just
probably
guessing.
Not Pinot Noir.
It's red, that's Burgundy.
You know, and there's a ton of bad domestic varietals that are...
Yeah.
Bad.
Yeah.
But I'm talking mainstream production grapes. I'm like least likely to look at Pinot Noir. Now, does that mean I hate it? No. But when I look to buy wine, it's like I'm probably least likely to look at that. I would probably look at a Cab Franc before that.
What about Malbec? You're going to look
Viognier.
At you're going to I mean you, see, you could say Malbec or a Pinotage. Nobody looks at Pinotage.
Yeah, I would buy Pinotage. Malbec's probably in the same category as Pinot Noir.
Oh, my God.
In terms of, I'm least likely to buy it.
You could say Cinsault.
No,
say,
I wouldn't say Cinsault.
You wouldn't say Cinsault?
You don't see Cinsault to buy, but what Cinsaults do we buy? Turleys. Yeah, and you just don't see it also. It's like, it's pretty obscure.
You know what I'm going to say?
Hmm.
This is a love and hate. I'm going to say Zinfandel.
That's fucking
if you're gonna
stupid.
Say Pinot Noir, I'm gonna say Zinfandel.
No, you can.
You're
just
ignorant
dumb.
Dick.
I didn't say
no,
I hated Pinot Noir. It's
I
just like it's
it.
Like the
I mean,
least
I just said it to piss you off.
Likely thing I'm gonna buy.
No, the least likely. Well, you changed the thing.
Well, but I can't say
that's
I,
very likely that I'll
I
buy
can't
Pinot Noir.
Say I hate any red varietal that it's like that. But
I mean, if I'm gonna pick the one I'm least likely to buy, it's probably Merlot outside of Right Bank Bordeaux. But I mean, because you're like, I bought the Merlot because it was $15 cheaper than the Cabernet. That's what you know, it's like, oh, I could buy Whitehall Lane Merlot for $31, but their cab costs $47, but I'm still buying Whitehall Lane, right? Boop, 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 as Becky would say. You know, you're like, oh, McCamus, oh, I could get that for $60, but their cab was like $125, so... It's McCain. It's just. It is.
I hear your argument there, but no.
It's,
for me,
it's the second place wine. Even the winery is treated that way.
Of course, but Pinot. It's like so many of them. People want to say they like them, but then when you have them, it's.
I always love them.
Meiomi.
No, that's not. I mean, if we're talking about shitty versions of shitty things, Cabernet is probably the most offensive one of those.
Yeah. But you know what you're getting, you know.
Yeah, but Pinot
on that quest for that California designation cab, and we're probably never going to find it.
Well, we have another contestant later tonight.
There's other contestants.
There's so many bastard wines out there. But normally, you stay away from the Pinots generally.
I mean,
I do. You don't say, I'm going to give that 19 Crimes Pinot Noir a try. You don't say that, do you?
It's disgusting.
We did have a Ménage à Trois Lavages, didn't we? It was their Pinot Noir, because you bought that. But, we had that. Was it Lavage or Lavage?
Something like that.
Dick Suck? I don't know what it was called. Yeah, oh, yeah. It was bad. Yeah. It lost to the gas station wine that was from Ohio, the Hocking Hills Winery.
It did lose. It wasn't even close.
It wasn't close. Yeah, and I bought that wine at a gas station.
And maybe you've got the point that it's the Malbec, because, as Becky said, you know, I like red wine. I like Malbec. She would make fun of those.
Was
people.
That Becky's voice? That you just
no,
did?
But she was.
You're
still.
You're pissed off. By the way, she was here. She did stop by, off the air, and said, "I can't taste anything because of my medicine." It's like whatever.
That's what Rob said.
Yeah. I want to go watch my TV. We can hear her TV right now.
I was.
It's good sound from that
simply
TV.
Simply doing Becky's voice, mm-hmm. mocking these other people who said. I love an Argentinian Malbec. And she's right. That's what people said.
Well, that's true. But although.
So, maybe that's right. But do I hate a Malbec? No. It is difficult to find a good Malbec.
The Agio is quite good. But there are good Malbecs. But I would agree Malbec sometimes is an overplayed varietal. Partly because, you know, it can be good if you spend enough money, but when you spend enough money, you go buy something like this that we're drinking right now. It's not who buys a $40 Malbec? I think that's a good point. Who the hell does that? If you do, come here. I have a wiffle ball bat to hit you with.
Well,
maybe in your private parts. We'll just see. Oh, you twit. I mean, Bo, just, we have lots of bottles that we drank, empty bottles. And Bo whacked it with his tail, and they were wobbling on the bookshelf. And as soon as they stop, he walks back and sniffs them to make sure that they didn't fall down. At least he's a respectful dumbass.
Oh, no, he's not respectful. He was looking for an opportunity to get turned again.
He was staring at his tail just now. He's like, what did you do, tail? Bushy thing on my ass? What did you do? You knocked down the bottles? Hello, Bubba. Hello, Bubba. Bubba.
To recap, there was an evening where I brought over a nice bottle of Italian.
Gran Selezione.
And I dropped it out of my bag. It was actually... Anyway.
Yeah, Scott and I then later had a different... another bottle from that same thing that he dropped. And God, it was good.
It was the same bottle.
Well, it's the same wine. It's just a different bottle. He broke the other one. And it was so fucking good.
And Bo knew it.
Oh, Bo knew it.
We were concerned for his well-being, but at one point we were concerned for him getting hammered.
The liver can process that.
At one point, Rob moved the table to hide the spill from him. And
he was still putting his face underneath it.
Yes.
Anything he could do to get to that.
Lifting the table up with his back so he could drink the wine from the carpet.
That was, what was it, El Grigio?
El Grigio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's good. Oh, yeah. Very nice.
Really good.
I know. So we both are kind of agreeing on Malbec.
I think that it's just...
No offense, Malbec drinkers.
I'm most likely to avoid buying Pinot Noir just because.
You suck?
Well, how much Pinot are you buying? I mean, if it's not Alpatagua, I'm just not
quite
really.
Quite a bit, actually.
I'm just not really that interested.
I have 30 some bottles of Pinot.
Okay.
Maybe 35.
Sure.
I mean, I have Hanzel, for Christ's sake.
I've got a
Hartford.
Couple at the house, but that's it.
That's it?
That's just it.
I have a whole section for Pinot. And there's also stuff from Beaujolais in there too. But
I mean, will I in the future like get some Mary Edwards or something like that? Yeah.
I'd go Hanzel before Mary Edwards.
Well, but you know, something a little more high end. Yeah,
Rose Rock.
But
you know, I have Will Love Block. What the hell is that stuff? I have too many. Goldeneye.
I'm just as happy you know, buying Turley allotment.
I bought another 3 bottles of Apatagua because I don't know if they're going to have it much more.
No shit. Longer. You just never know.
I mean, it's a little old. Becky can't taste anything now anyway because of her medicine. So
it's 15.
It's not what the cost? $12.99.
No. The Apatagua. What vintage is it?
Oh, it's 18.
2018.
Yeah, it's not dust in the bottle, for God's sake. So. Well, folks, we're going to take a break and then we'll be right back with the review here on the Wine Vault. And we're back, folks. So now for the review for the Clos de Montévay. Côte du Rhône, from obviously France. Scott, we're going to go over to you. Get your score.
1, highly recommended. Yeah. 2, this is a Hall of Fame wine. I'm just a sucker for texture in wine. Mm-hmm. And I also love that. This doesn't really shift gear. It's just a slow crescendo. The texture is. It starts off kind of light on the palate. You know, we quaff an air over it. It's just kind of light. And then it just becomes a little more dense, a little more dense. And then by the time you're to the finish, it's almost like this dairy, creamy texture. I just love that.
Oh, yeah.
It's a slightly different expression of Grenache, but that may be because it's, you know, 35% other stuff. It was Suckling on the review that talked about that rich plum on
it
the
was
finish.
Me, yes, that's correct.
It's fermented in concrete and it's mostly aged in concrete, but it's got like 20%, you know, old and new.
Yeah.
Oaking. And it's really a deft touch with the oaking. It really just a nice kiss of oak at the finish. It's a astringent finish. It's just wonderful. Not the biggest nose. 91 of my points. This is everything I like about Rhone, except it's just a little different. It's Southern Rhone. It's, I think, to the masses, this would have a little more appeal and a little more drinkability.
Yeah.
But what a great $20 bottle of wine.
Now it's on to me. Now, while Scott was talking, I did the ultimate tribute to this wine. Ordered 2 more bottles on wine.com. It'll be here in 2 days. I love the internet. $46 of my money. That's shipping and tax and everything. And guess what? You should do that as well. Especially now since I've ordered mine. This is a lovely wine. Mouthfeel cannot be undersold on this thing. It's just such a perfumey palate, you know, and the creaminess, the fruit, the way the oak comes in. There's just so many wonderful elements to this wine that it just cannot be ignored. It's one of my favorite things we've drank around $20. It really is.
I agree.
I'm giving this wine 92 of my points.
Fair
and that's
enough.
A soft 92.
It well, could, you're soft.
Well, you know, right now, yes. Really? Let me check. Don't touch me. Anyway, I don't know.
Oh, Lord.
It is on the verge of a 93. Very close. But there's no ageability. Things like that.
Yes,
it's not collectible. But from a pure drinking standpoint, for things that are interesting, it's just a little bit below the Marietta Monte Cristo. Or the not Monte Cristo, the Marietta Cristo.
There's a couple other things. You know, it just doesn't have really an expression of minerality. It doesn't have an expression of earthiness.
It doesn't need it.
And I agree, it doesn't need it, but
yeah, but it would, to, but it would accent those
to take it
foods
to
that have life. Those things. It would accent those well.
And I agree, it would accent that type of food. But in terms of where I'm at with my score, that's why this isn't this.
This is the best Cote de Rhone I've ever had.
No,
it's the best, Scott. It's the best Cote de Rhone I've ever had. It is. I don't think that's saying that much. I mean, we've had things that we've enjoyed quite a bit, maybe 90s, 89s. I mean, all of those things that we've drank. But this is better than those. It just is. It's a classier wine. It transcends the appellation or the whatever you want to call it of Cote de Rhone. It transcends that.
Yeah, it's
I don't even think of it as a Cote de Rhone.
It's a little bit of an outlier for Cote de Rhone.
I mean, it's cheating. It's cheating. It's like, you know, Lamborghini said, you know what? We're going to make a hot hatchback. And, you know, they make it so it's reasonably priced, but they kind of cheated a little bit. And, you know, naturally, it's better than everything else. It'll break down, mind you. But forgetting all that, it's just better stock, better everything doing this in a smaller amount, too. It's once again, like I said before, this is not their moneymaker. This is not, they're not trying to sell 110,000 cases of this. That's not the point of this wine. I think you'll find the case production is relatively very low for a relatively inexpensive wine. And there belies a lot of the quality. And yeah, it's not like they're going to, they're not going to, you know, completely separate themselves off from their proper winemaking techniques either. They don't have factory techniques. And you taste that.
You do taste
it. I mean, Jigal, okay, they do a little bit. That's how they do it, you know? They do have bigger production stuff. They do. They're scaled up production. Luis Bernard is similar in that fashion, too. Probably not like Jigal is, but, no. You know, or even Chapoutier. We like Belarus from Chapoutier. But those are scaled up wines. This isn't.
This isn't.
And so when you have a wine from a region that you do really enjoy, but it's one of the better versions of that, it just makes it so much exponentially better. It really does. Special wine, Hall of Fame, extremely highly recommended for anybody that drinks red wine that wants something interesting tonight. If you want something boring, you know, well, then fuck you. But, but if you like something interesting that's going to excite your palate, challenge you, but all in easy ways, challenging you to want to drink better. That's what this wine does. You know, it just comes down to the line of the things that we've had. The Boy was amazing. You know, Marietta Cristo, amazing. There's been so many amazing wines. Is this quite as good as those? No, but it's right there. I mean, it's in the same. It's a special wine that enjoys, that is good for any night of the week.
And one of the things that I'm going to compare this to is because this is just a little surprising because it's just a little different for Cote de Rhone.
Mm-hmm.
Is this my favorite Cote de Rhone? That's tough, man. It's like Louis always going to have a place.
No, Louis not, Scott. Louis, if you drank this side by side with Louis, you would not touch the Louis. Louis is fine, but it's a cheap wine, and you can taste that compared to this.
But it was that bigger, bolder, and this. I think Louis ages better.
First of all, that's your myth that Louis ages.
We
Louis
were
doesn't.
Drinking 2013, 2 years ago,
no,
sir.
We were drinking 2015.
We had some 2015, if you recall. You recall. Somebody ordered it and got some 2013.
Okay, this is the thing. High alcohol tends to age better.
I get it, but we both said this is not an ageable thing. And
well, no. James says this isn't ageable. And Cote de Rhone suggests it isn't that ageable. But I think 3 to 5 years will be perfectly fine for this wine. That's all you should ever do with a Cote de Rhone. But the bottles I'm going to buy, no, I'm not going to drink them immediately. But I'll drink them the next 3 years.
Yeah.
And I'm going to really enjoy every time I drink them.
Yep.
So.
I love it. I do. But.
Yeah.
Is it my favorite Cote de Rhone?
It is.
No, it's just really super interesting. It's right there. But
it's his favorite Cote du Rhone.
It's your favorite.
No, it's yours too. So,
how would you compare this for quality, for price point,
to PR?
The Chateau Bordeaux.
Chateau Bordeaux? I don't know what that is. Chateau Bordeaux?
You don't know that?
Now, try that again. What are you talking about? Chateau Bordeaux?
Yeah.
Chateau. You mean Chateau Bourdonnais? Do you have a label so I can refresh my... I don't remember what Chateau Bordeaux is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is.
Well, what is it? Let me see the label. So I can see what you're talking about. Chateau Bordeaux?
We just had a bottle of it. I bought like a case of it.
Chateau Bordeaux. I'm assuming that it's from Bordeaux?
Bordeaux? Yeah.
Bourdonnais.
No, just Bordeaux.
Okay, you call it Bordeaux. Bordeaux.
Bourdieu.
I know what you mean. Yes, Bourdieu.
It's
not as good as this, but it's good. You mean the Côte de Blaye? That's the not the N1 or the N degree.
No. Côte de Blaye?
Yeah, Côte de Blaye. Yeah. I have three bottles of that. It's good. It's good. Different wine though too.
In Bordeaux, but similar. Kind of a little bit of an outlier for Bordeaux, just a little bit.
I didn't know. The N degree is a little more of an outlier. And that's that other weirdo thing, or N1 or whatever you want to call it. The Blaye is just a very, very well done, good entry-level Bordeaux. Very, very good.
Yeah.
But it's predominantly Merlot, I believe.
It's Merlot.
And it's a wonderful. This though is perfumey. I wouldn't even compare the two.
Similarly, that has an exquisite mouthfeel.
Well,
as elevated as this is.
No.
The difference between the two is that one, that mouthfeel hits you right away.
Similarly, it's
entry priced French. That wine and this wine are the reason we love French wines.
That's a very, very good wine, and I have three bottles of it. I never get around to drinking it. It's not my favorite, like the La Roque or the there's a couple other ones that we've had that are in that price range. I prefer, but it's a very good wine, and it's available, and it's very, very reasonable. Was it $14.99?
I think it is $12.99.
Well, I never got it for $12. I got it for $14. But the Chateau La Prade at $19.99. That's amazing. That is a huge wine. That's on this level.
I would say that's it's different, but that's probably the best comparison point. We also thought
the Prod's a little better than this.
We also thought that had some mass appeal to it.
That thing, and I've had it a few times. Every time, you just stop, and I've been mesmerized. Sometimes you have a second time, you're not as mesmerized. Maybe it was just whatever.
Right.
That thing, the second time I had it, I was doubly mesmerized. It was last spring, I think, when I had another bottle of it.
Yeah, stop and what you're doing. I'm about to ruin the image and the style that you're used
to. Stunning. And this wine is there. I wouldn't call it as stunning as that, but it's stunning still. It's very good. So, for the Clos de Montivet, which I just butchered. Côte de Rhone. Bravo, tip of the cap.
Yeah.
Excellent wine. So, for Rob the Wine Guy and Scott the Unlicensed Taxi Driver, we will bid you adieu, but see you next time here on The Wine Vault. Good night.